Welcome to Designed for More, brought to you by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Join Dr. Jennings, a renowned expert in psychiatry, neuroscience, and spiritual well-being, as he explores the connections between mind, body, spirit, and relationships.
Welcome to Designed for More, sponsored by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. I'm Dr. Tim Jennings, joined today by Danielle Rome, one of our therapists, and our program today is art and health in the four domains. Danielle, I'm very excited about this program because my background is not in art therapy, so I'm expecting to learn a lot from you today. So tell us a little about your background, about art, and how art can have a role in helping our patients heal.
Absolutely. So my background, training for art therapy is actually a three-year master's program entirely focused in art therapy. So my bachelor's is in both art and psychology. And then for my master's degree, it was entirely art therapy. And then I opted to take extra classes and other programs to do mental health counseling as well. I was also involved in research. So training to be an art therapist is rather extensive because art is so powerful that people can actually be hurt if it's not used correctly.
Oh, maybe you could even, you know, as we go through, highlight some of the areas of concern or where we might not want to use art or where we need to be cautious.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be great. So give us an overview of what we're going to talk about today.
So I'd like to start off with actually what the Bible says about art and creativity. Rather than starting with what art therapy is and then bringing the Bible into it, I'd actually like to create a foundation of scripture and then bring art therapy into that. So I want to start with that and then give a few case examples of how art therapy can be used and applied. And then I want to talk about how art can actually increase health in all four domains for all Christians, not just people who were given certain gifts of skill.
So can I actually clarify something you just said?
Absolutely.
So when you say art can help bring health in all four domains for all Christians, how about for all people?
Yes, absolutely.
I just wanted to clarify
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Today I want to really speak to our Christian listeners.
Yes.
Definitely all of our listeners, but I'm hoping that at the end of this episode, our listeners can feel encouraged that they can use art regardless of their skill to increase their relationship with God, increase health in their mind, body, spirit, and relationships.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that our show is all about, the Design for More aspect of our show.
Yes.
That the principles of life and health, like the laws of health, law of gravity, laws of physics, things that govern the operation of our minds, relationships, transcend religious belief systems.
Yes.
They're the protocols upon which life and health operate.
Yes.
And so that's why I asked my question, because I'm certain, I was already certain, and I kind of knew the answer, that that if it's therapeutic and actually brings healing, it is not dependent upon one's belief about it.
Yes.
Okay. But so that's why I'm so excited about this, because this is a domain I don't have a lot of experience with. Even though I love the design law protocols and perspectives, you're going to actually help bring a whole new, you know, therapeutic tool into that understanding. I'm looking forward to it.
Do we want to just dive
right
in?
Yeah. Do that.
So I want to introduce some of what the Bible says about creativity. So in Genesis 1:1, God introduces himself in the Bible as creator. That's the first trait of God that we see in the very first verse of the Bible, is that he created reality. He created the heavens and the earth. And very soon after, God gives dominion to people, asking us to make something of the world. And then right after, it talks about how he created us in his image. So very early on in the Bible, we see that God created us to create. And of course, this is not limited to art. Creativity is something that spans so much of life. But I want to focus on art because very soon after that, when God was giving instructions for the tabernacle, he gave really specific instruction regarding different craftsmanship.
Questions. And didn't he bless a couple of families with particular artistic skills?
Yes, okay? I'm going to get to that.
Okay, yep. Yes. But back to the made in his image.
Yep.
What do you say to the Christian who says, well, that's procreation. That's we create when we have children.
Sure.
But you would say, sure, but it's not limited to that.
No, absolutely not. And when we talk about creativity and what creativity actually is, people start to realize how many parts of their life they actually are being creative. When you cook a meal, you have to be creative. When you engage in the scientific process, you have to be creative, right? So
Decorating your house.
Decorating your house. Yeah.
And deciding how you want to decorate your Christmas tree.
Yes.
I mean, this is all part of creativity, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So very quickly, when I talk to people about this, they start to realize all the ways that they are creative. So in Exodus 31, 3 through 5.
Well, let me ask you another question about this, though, because I'm very interested.
Absolutely.
So already I'm seeing a link between exercising an ability God gave us. He gave us an ability for creativity.
Yes.
Okay. Exercising that ability then can help us develop. Is that what you're going to make an argument?
We're going to get to that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right.
So, I'm already thinking, and I don't want to, you know, because I have no idea where you're going to go with this.
Yeah.
But I'm already thinking then that ability is an ability that can be used for good or evil.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Creativity.
Yes.
And of course, we want to help people use it for good.
Yes.
Yes. But keep going.
Absolutely. So in Exodus 31 3-5, it says, God says, "And I have filled him with the Spirit of God, with wisdom, with understanding, with knowledge, and with all kinds of skills, to make artistic designs for work in gold, silver, and bronze, to cut and set stones, to work in wood, and to engage in all kinds of crafts." So that very specifically says that that's a spirit of wisdom and understanding that God gifted some specific people for the development of his tabernacle, to make something beautiful and to make something of the earth that he created, to develop it further into something that's beautiful, to create a space that's holy and facilitates worship and communion with him.
Yeah, so I'm already thinking of the, because we're framing this in the Bible.
Yes.
And I love that because, of course, we are believers in the Creator.
Yes.
Okay. But there may be people who listen to the show that aren't.
Absolutely.
And can we use evidence of creativity that that would separate us from, you know, lower life forms?
Absolutely.
And one of the things that would set human beings apart from other animals is, you know, creativity, humor, capacity for language. There are higher orders of function that, and that creativity would be part of using an ability called imagination.
Yes.
That's part of creativity, isn't
it? Yes.
An ability to anticipate, plan through time and a sense of time, because in order to really create, you have to sometimes let things dry and then come back. But I mean, there's a time element to creativity, isn't there?
Oh, yes. And we're going to get into all of those.
Yeah, we're going to get into those things. Yes. But I'm just pointing out for the critic that you don't get this ability through mutation and evolution over billions of years.
Mm.
This was an endowed, structured, written into the code of our DNA by a designer who designed us with capacities and abilities.
Right. Created to create.
Created to create, yes. So I'm going to suggest that this ability itself becomes evidence of the Creator, and it's not something that you can argue or demonstrate through evolutionary processes of somehow emerging.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for adding that. And part of what I want to talk about, or at least just point out in the beginning with the biblical evidence, is that God initiated kind of this dance with us of creating back and forth. So he initiated it when he created us, and then called us to create in return for him as an act of worship for him.
I like where you're going with that. Keep going. Finish your point, but then I have another one. If you do this, you notice you're stimulating my mind.
I'm sure.
Okay. No, it is great. This is what we're supposed to do. And so creating is not just creating the physical world substances, it's also creating ideas.
Yes, yes.
And so right in the garden, after God created all the life, he called the animals to Adam and asked Adam to name them.
Wow, yeah.
Isn't that a creative aspect where Adam is joining now with God to be part of the creating? He's creating the names of what we're going to call. Is that part of creation?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
But so that's what my mind jumped to when you said that he built us for this relationship of creating.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. A few chapters later in Exodus 35, he says, "And he has given both him and Oholiab, son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan, the ability to teach others. He has filled them with a skill to do all kinds of work as engravers, designers, embroiders in blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and fine linen, and weavers, all of them skilled workers and designers." So not only is he talking about instilling specific skill, but also God specifically says that he has given some people the ability to teach the skill of art making.
First art teacher.
right? So that immediately cuts out people saying, well, I just don't have that gift. I'm just not gifted or skilled automatically, so I can't participate in this part of creativity. When in Exodus, so early on, God is explicitly saying that he has given some of these artists the ability to teach others to engage in that process.
So I want to comment on that. Because I think we had a little bit of a discussion about this idea sometime in the past.
Yeah.
And I will agree with you that anybody can be creative and do creative things.
Yes.
And if you have that as your definition of art, then everybody can do art.
Absolutely.
Okay. But if we talk what some might define as fine arts, the fine arts.
Yes.
Okay. Not everybody, even with teaching, has the same innate skill and ability to excel. Not everybody, even with teaching, will become a Mozart. Is that not fair? So if you take, there are people you could take and give them decades of education, they will never become Mozart, but they can come better where they were. They can learn and become and gain skills in music or art or whatever, but some people are innately more gifted and then therefore can expand that ability. Would you disagree with that?
A little bit. So
yeah.
I think what you're touching on is something I'm going to get into in a little bit, which is lies we believe about beauty and what beauty is supposed to be. Across cultures, what considers something fine art is very different.
I would agree with that. But whatever culture you're in, in that culture, there will be some people that are innately more gifted at the talent or the ability than others.
Sure.
And therefore, no matter if you take 100 people and put them all in the same classes, at the end of 10 years of training, you will not have them all at the same level of proficiency.
That's true. But
okay, because some people have an innate, some people, like Mozart was composing music at age 5.
Right.
Okay. You can take 105-year-olds and train them in piano and whatever. You will not get many of them composing music at age 5. There's
that
something innately
style of music.
Any composition in the complexities of musical structure. Yes, they can bang out some songs, but they're not going to have that complexity. Regardless of the culture, put them in any culture, there are some that have an innate gift. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And if you train it, it gets better.
Sure.
Wherever you start.
Sure, yeah.
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 And so when you said some people say I don't have any art talent, I like what you're doing because you're challenging them to look at other areas where they might have art talent. They might not have the greatest musical skill, but they might have, interior design decorating skills.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yes, I agree with you in that part.
Okay.
So I want to move forward with some more biblical evidence. So as scripture continues, God also talks about his return in creativity.
Can I say something else?
Yes.
Because I like this idea of you're expanding my understanding of art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, just wait.
No, expanding as the creativity. And so I've never considered myself really artistic because I didn't have great talent innately in doing some of these things. Okay. But there's something called the art of medicine.
Yes. Yes.
And I actually think I'm very good in the art of medicine and mental wellness.
It takes great creativity.
Yes.
Yes.
And so if that is included in and I've applied myself and studied and worked it, and I've gotten better at the art of concepts and metaphors sense, if we're going to expand it to creativity, then okay, I'm with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So keep going.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And we'll talk about some of the specific benefits of the act of art making or craft making.
Okay.
Also, but we see God's return in his step in the dance of back and forth creating. In Ephesians 2:10, it says, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do."
Like that.
And then he continued, yes. Yeah.
But most people hear that good works as not art.
Oh, sure. It can mean a lot of different things.
No, but they hear the good works as the work of primarily not sinning. Mm-hmm. That's the work. Okay. I like where you're going with it because I actually think you're right. I think the good works are the work of living an authentic godly life, which includes creativity and expressing God's love and truth in all types of ways that are enriching and bring flourishing to your community.
Yes.
And it has very little to do with looking at the things I can't do. It's looking at the things I can express myself in godly ways. Would you say that's fair?
It's creating. It's adding.
Yes.
It's
yes.
adding things that don't already exist, using your hands and your mind to add things.
So if we look at that to do good works as working hard not to do bad, we're actually not being creative.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's good.
Yep,
I like
absolutely.
That. Yeah.
And so it continues.
This is fun.
I know, right? Oh, yeah, just wait. So as it continues, God talks about how he continues to create. So creation was not a one-time thing, but he continues to create in the way that he transforms us. So 2 Corinthians 3:18, and we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit.
Interesting. Because now I don't disagree, but that adds a nuance or a context when you say continues to create. Would we say, because we want to nip certain theological constructs, I think, in the bud.
Absolutely.
Because there are some people who believe that this, what you just said, would support the idea that God wanted them to fall into sin so that he could continue to create.
Never heard that. That's no, awful.
Well, they wouldn't say it that way, but there are theological schools out there that believe that it was God's intention for them to sin.
Hmm. Wow.
Okay, I don't believe that.
Yeah, no.
And so had they not sinned, then the recreation piece wouldn't exist.
Yep.
The recreation is part of God's creative character, love, seeking to fix what sin has done, but it was not his intention that it be there. And so you would naturally see him working to recreate and fix, and you'll see that. So I agree with you there.
Yes.
But that's his plan to heal and recover what's been damaged. He was never planned for his artwork to be damaged in the first place.
Absolutely.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to consider, because he told them to have dominion over the earth and to develop it before sin.
Yes.
So there was to be this. And if I can take an aside, if we believe, since we're in the biblical narrative, we believe the biblical narrative that there was a flood, and all everything that was created prior to the flood was buried basically in the earth. But some commentators have suggested that prior to the flood, God is a great artist. We did not see the earth as it is now. It was not created the way it is now. The great mountains that we have, like the Rockies and the Himalayas, they were like, of course, if we use the idea of a body, corresponding to bones in the body, and they are sticking out now of the flesh,
It
was never God's design for that. There were no polar extremes, and some would suggest even in their imagination, in a sanctified thought, how would God create as the artist and the person he is, that we didn't have rivers with mud bottoms. We had rivers with combinations of sapphires and emeralds and rubies and platinum and gold, and the earth was decorated as a great artist would do.
Wow.
Okay, and much of this precious metal stuff was all buried at the time of the flood, but God used it to decorate, if you will, artistically, the earth prior to the flood. I can't prove that,
right?
But it fits, doesn't it? As an artist, would you say, well, that actually kind of makes sense? Could you imagine a waterfall that had all this in the water
Absolutely.
Coming? Yeah, I mean, so
Absolutely.
Anyway,
yeah, it sounds beautiful.
So then you think, well, God is an artist, and what would that have looked like if Adam and Eve had not fallen? We can only,
imagine.
But we get the idea of the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. How is it described? As a jewel, pearly gates, streets of gold. I mean, it's very artistic, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And so I think that what you're saying is absolutely true. Just wanted to divert any ideas away that God needed the fall for him to continue his artistry. No, he didn't.
Absolutely. And there's entire areas of art that are all transformation or restoration. You know, I think about people that take furniture and restore it. That's their way of making art.
Yeah.
It's furniture that was once handcrafted, hand carved, made beautiful initially. Over time, maybe it got worn down or it got broken. And somebody's art form is taking that old broken furniture, putting it back together and making it maybe in some cases even different than the way it initially was. But using creativity
Beautiful
and artistic
and
skill to restore it. Yeah. That, and that is.
And do you use that object lesson for our patients who maybe have been broken or damaged, or that God can take the broken pieces and put them together and make them maybe different, but beautiful and useful?
So one of the sculptures that I made in undergrad was I took a chair that was rescued from a house fire or found after a house fire. It was completely broken. It was charred. And what I did was I put it back together. I put reinforcements on it. And then I covered it in wet paint, white paint specifically. And I didn't just paint it. I poured the wet paint over it so you could see as it hardened that it was dripping and covered. And I also put like fake pearls in it. So it symbolized that restoration, the overflowing of purity that God pours onto us.
You still have that? Do you have a picture?
Yes, I have pictures, of course.
You have to show those to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll show you later.
Good.
And then I, took pictures of that chair in all different places and settings.
Okay.
I'll share that with you later. But and then of course, right on this, 2 Corinthians 5:17, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away, and behold, the new has come. So that again is evidence of the continued creating that God does with us. Isaiah 64:8, but now, O Lord, you are the Father, we are the clay. You are our potter, we are the work of your hand.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the potter clay idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And in your art education and training, mm-hmm. did you work with clay at some point?
Yes, I had to. But I was not gifted in that area.
There's one of those areas, okay.
And I think I could have gotten better if I cared enough about it to work hard. Mm-hmm. But I was good at other things like woodworking, and so I focused on that instead.
I've heard object lessons and sermons on that, as we all have.
Yes,
that the potter, as they get the clay, sometimes there's some impurities in it, and their fingers feel those and slowly work those out to purify and so forth. It's a good object lesson. Keep going.
Absolutely. So, okay. So with all of this said, it would seem like, okay, well, why aren't we all being creative? Why aren't we all engaging in some physical creativity process if we see this laid out everywhere? So I believe that there's two main reasons that we don't. The first is lies about beauty. And I touched on this a little bit earlier. But the Bible is very clear in how God sees beauty. In Song of Solomon, the bride is described as maybe not meeting physical beauty standards at the time. You know, she works outside, she works hard, maybe hasn't taken care of herself. But the bridegroom says to the bride, "You are altogether beautiful, my love, and there is no flaw in you." Song of Solomon 4:7. In 1 Samuel 16:7, it says that the Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Very clear in what God sees when he looks at us is not our outward appearance, our outward, beauty, according to how the world sees it, but in how our hearts are being transformed closer to his design for us. And so I think when we look at beauty in this context, that can change the view of the artwork.
But aren't you actually also, and I like where you're going, okay, so I'm supportive of this, but I'm going to clarify it, that there is a standard of beauty that is
worldly,
unencroachable and not changeable. In other words, it's not in the eye of the beholder. There's a standard of beauty when it comes to character, honesty, loyalty, integrity, altruistic love, kindness, gentleness, mercy, grace. I mean, there's a certain standard of beauty and villainy, exploitation, abuse, selfishness, hostility, vulgarity. You wouldn't argue that those things actually become beautiful in the eye of the beholder, would you?
No.
Now, some people can find them beautiful.
But
that's a reflection of their corruption.
Yes, exactly. Not,
we wouldn't argue that those things are truly beautiful.
Absolutely.
So there is. So on the physical side, we might argue that beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yes.
But there's actually an eternal standard of what true beauty is.
Yes.
And okay, I don't want to go too far afield.
Yeah.
But I think that's what you were trying to say, and I want people to, that's part of the design.
Yes.
Okay. And so things that are beautiful are like you say, restoration and creation, not destruction.
Yes.
And tearing down.
Yes.
And whether it's tearing down something that's healthy and good.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tearing down other people is not beautiful. But tearing down lies,
yes,
is beautiful.
Yes.
Tearing down falsehood to open hearts to truth,
yes,
is beautiful. But not tearing down people.
Yes.
There's a subtle difference there, right?
Yes. God had Nehemiah clear all of the rubble before rebuilding the temple.
Right, because it was in ruins, because it was, they had to clear the ground for the the new building to take place. And in our lives, we can have stuff in our lives that, you're probably going to get to that, but that's a great metaphor, stuff in our lives that have accumulated over time that might not be healthy or adapted, actually wounds that are unhealed, garbage that we've collected.
Yes.
And sometimes we have to clear that stuff out in order to bring healing, to build a beautiful character structure. And and character structure. And you, well, let's think about this art in the lines of character. Is it random? Just throw pain at the wall. And in other words, just throw experiences at a person and you'll get beautiful character. Is it random? Or is character development based on actual choices people make?
Yes. That one.
You can't get it. You can't get good character with every experience, depending on the choice you make. I mean, bad experiences cause people to make healthy choices and mature from them. This is the Bible teaches that through trials and difficulties, we can grow. But it's the choice on how we respond to those experiences.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is important for our audience who want to create beautiful character.
Yes.
They're not a victim to the experiences because they have a choice in how they respond, react to the experiences. And even when somebody is trying to tear them down, verbally or otherwise, they still have a choice in how they internalize the experience with grace, forgiveness, understanding, wisdom, discernment. From the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks to the other person, showing they're struggling. That's not about me. I'm not going to take the hatred into my heart, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So the art, in other words, the paintbrush is in the artist's hands. And when it comes to each individual character, it is you and your heavenly, you know, Savior who are the artist painting your character.
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. And working together with God in the process.
Yes.
He wants to continue to create you into who you can be. But you have to take part in that with him. That's the dance of creativity.
I love that.
Yes.
Yeah, keep going.
Absolutely. Yeah. So bringing it back to the things
we're already halfway through the show, so I want to make sure we get to...
We might have to do a part two.
We might, but we're already halfway through, and I want to be sure we get to the examples, the applications, some of the stuff you brought.
Absolutely.
So I'm trying to hurry along, just a
hair. Absolutely. Okay, so thinking about different things that get in our way, this is important. Another thing that gets in our way from being willing to engage in the process is shame. When you are feeling ashamed, you cannot fully access creativity.
That's neurobiological.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's, and I'm going to throw in and see if you agree, guilt.
Yes.
Guilt and shame.
Yes.
Either one will interfere. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So shame exists in emotional experiential memory. It's not cognitive.
Okay. I'm going to challenge you a hair though.
Okay.
What would you say that to the person, and I want you to defeat this argument. I'm going to say putting it out there so you can actually prove it wrong.
Okay.
Because I want to believe what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I've heard that from artists that any strong and powerful emotion can fuel art. Depress and suicidal thoughts fuel dark art. Mm-hmm. And so shame can actually be a medium to artistic expression of various kinds. So, but you're suggesting it impairs artistic expression. Clarify what you mean by that, that there's no artistic expression, or it twists the artistic expression down avenues that are maybe not in that standard of true beauty. I mean, what are you saying there?
So that gets pretty complicated because to a certain degree, I do see some truth in the argument that any emotion can fuel art making. And I will talk some about that, where in art therapy, you might, and this is the importance of doing art therapy with an actual art therapist, instead of just a therapist saying, okay, make art, because if somebody is being fueled by some of those darker things, the art in and of itself can't stay there. So here's what I mean by that. In therapy, I might facilitate somebody making art driven by those emotions in order to make them external that they can look at them, face them, see it for what it is, bring it to light. But then they have to continue the process into something that's transformative. So using the art to then transform that into something that's healing.
But
I'm going to get more in detail about that. I don't want to get too far into that now.
To see if I can understand perhaps the role of shame in what you said, because I believe there's truth in shame and guilt can shut it down, shut down creativity.
Yes.
Okay, I believe that. I also believe that strong emotions can fuel creativity.
Yes.
So is it possible that mild shame and guilt, a little bit, mm-hmm. Is not stifling, it's motivating to work it out.
Sure.
But if it's significant shame and guilt, it leads to defeatism, hopelessness, discouragement, and nihilism, why bother, why try, beliefs and attitudes of, I'm not good enough, my stuff is awful, nobody would want to see it anyway.
Yes.
So it is.
I think that's fair to say.
If something causes a little bit of it, that can motivate us to do something to resolve it, which could also be an artistic expression.
Yes.
But if it's not resolved and it grows, then ultimately it stagnates and basically kills us even.
Yes, I think that's
fair. Is that fair?
That is definitely fair to say.
Okay.
And so I think, with anything that's powerful, the enemy wants to keep us from being able to use it to grow in our relationship with God, right?
Okay, great.
And so art definitely is something that is targeted.
Okay.
And so when I think about shame, specifically as it relates to art making, have you ever met a child that does not make art? Have you ever heard of a child that does not make art?
No, they all do, yeah.
They all do.
Yeah, yeah.
So the difference is who stops and who keeps going. The people that stop usually have an experience earlier on where they were told, this is bad.
Okay, so I'm gonna clarify with you. I'm going to try to connect what you're saying now with what you said earlier.
Yes.
When you say people who stop, are you saying stop all creativity?
Or people who stop making art specifically.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So now art doesn't mean creativity anymore. Art means...
Yeah. So we'll get more into specific with art.
So when you say art, it's like the physical expressions of creativity, like drawing, painting, and this kind of stuff.
Yeah. That's a good clarification.
Okay. I wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. So, right now we're going to get more into specifics with visual arts and crafts.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Yeah. That's where we're going to clarify that. Yeah. And so all children do that as a way to make sense of their surroundings, add something into the world, process their experiences, understand symbols and things around them.
So what you're saying is sometimes they might have a negative experience that shuts them down.
Yes.
But is it also possible sometimes they actually get a new experience for their creativity, like maybe cooking, and they actually get into all types of creative cooking and they stop the drawing because they're putting their creativity in a new channel and it wasn't a negative. Is that possible too?
That is possible.
Okay. I want to tell our audience that it's not all or nothing here.
Yes. But there are unique benefits to visual arts and image making that we'll get into.
Okay. Keep going.
And so there, of course, would be some attack on that, I believe, because of the unique benefits of image making.
Okay. Attack by the enemy who doesn't want us to.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes,
gotcha.
Exactly. So there are people that I've worked with who I talk to them about art therapy. I suggest it. We sit down and they are making art. They're drawing for the first time in 20 to 30 years. And when they sit there and they're looking at the blank piece of paper, the feeling that they describe is fear, sometimes panic, fear of the shame that they don't want to feel. If they start to draw, the shame of what my response might be if I don't see it as good, if I don't see it as beautiful, because they haven't drawn since they were 8 years old.
And so what does that as a therapist, when somebody hasn't drawn for years and you put it for them to draw and they have this fear that you're describing and potential fear of you not liking it, what does that tell you psychologically about their struggles? Is there the art now is not the problem.
No.
The art is a way to pull out a problem they're struggling with. What do you understand the problem to be then?
Yeah. So imagery that we create is a physical representation of what's internal. So if they are feeling shame, they are definitely feeling some amounts of shame over other parts of their internal world.
So here's what I'm hearing as a psychiatrist, is the dynamic you described there, the art is revealing their hesitancy, their fear of your response, is revealing a person who fears what other people think about them in general.
Yes.
Who fears, and we don't know the details, but their operations are, they don't have confidence in themselves. They look externally for other validators. They fear being truly open and genuine because somebody might not like them.
Yes.
So they try to, shave their responses, adjust their presentations to meet the expectations of others. I mean, all of this can be intuited from this one experience as a potential struggle, and that would make life very stressful for them.
Yes.
And so we would want to get to know the patient to know the specifics, but in general, this is a suggested concern, isn't it, from what you're describing?
Yes, absolutely. And so when people speak, they can use filter. They have different defenses. They can hold back what they do and don't share with you. When they don't have artistic skill that they have been taught, they can't hide behind artistic skill. Things just come to the surface. Things are revealed that maybe they didn't choose to reveal.
Mm.
And so there is a fear of exposure. So what I've seen with people that are the most anxious is they have a secret. They have something they haven't shared with me yet.
Gotcha.
But here's the thing with engaging in the process of facing that shame is art is so non-consequential, right? So in that moment. So what I tell them is, you can throw this away in 30 minutes. You can throw this away in 5 minutes. What you create is what you create. It's yours. You can do with it what you want. This doesn't have to be something you put on your wall, right? And so what ends up happening is if they're able to face that feeling, overcome it, sit through the feeling of shame and embarrassment, and then be okay, they start telling me all sorts of stuff after.
Yeah.
Suddenly they become more comfortable sharing parts of their experience that they were previously too afraid to read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it is a form of self-exposure.
Yes.
Which is what all true psychotherapy is.
Yes.
Okay. Metaphor of psychotherapy.
Yes.
And why it's hard for people is disrobing.
Yes.
Not physically, but taking off one's veneer that they take out in public and let their true self be seen.
Yes.
And as people would consider a disrobing literally in front of others, it would be very anxiety and stress provoking.
Yes.
So therapy and these types of disclosures of self can be very frightening.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, keep going.
Absolutely. So now I would like to move more into specifics with art therapy.
Do it.
So, but I want to revisit the concept of skill, right?
Okay.
That's come up quite a bit. And there is a time and a place for skill and teaching skill within art therapy. So there's, art therapy where we're not even looking at skill, we're not touching it. It's what you create is what you create. But then there's also the act of teaching skill in something that, again, is relatively non-consequential, can instill a confidence that people can then apply to facing things previously maybe they were too afraid to revisit.
When you say teaching skill, the patient teaching it or you teaching it to them?
The therapist teaching elements of skill to the patient.
Because there isn't, I'm sure they're down the road as they mature and heal or whatever, or gain mastery, there will be also therapeutic benefits for them to teach.
Yes.
But that's a different discussion. So
absolutely.
Keep going.
Absolutely. So I'd like to move into a specific case example now.
Yes,
so,
please.
Of course, I have changed many details about this person in order to make it literally impossible to figure out who I'm talking about.
Protecting confidentiality.
Yes.
Sure.
So I want to say that to our listeners. So I worked with a 25-year-old male recovering from addiction with heroin. He had been in and out of homelessness and had a history of physical, psychological, and sexual abuse. So this is an example of how art therapy can actually be used in conjunction with standard psychotherapy. So I was not this person's individual therapist, but I saw him once a week for an individual session where we just painted together. So here I have an example of a painting. This is the one that I made, and we'll have this up on the screen. But what we did was we sat together outside for 1 hour once a week for 5 months and worked on the exact same small painting of the same small scene. So through the act of painting, he had to sit through the process of continuing to revisit the same thing, to work through it, to perfect it, sometimes painting over parts and starting over, developing more and more skill, sitting through wanting to give up, sitting through seeing new parts of things. And that mirrored, that mirrored the therapeutic process. And so having weekly, this met several therapeutic goals. Having weekly something that he could predict and look forward to that he was doing with another person who was sitting and doing it with him, was able to do something that mirrored the process, gave him hope and confidence to push through, to continue going. He considered giving up and running away several times, but one of the only reasons he sat with it and he stayed was because of the weekly art making that we were doing, and he wanted to finish the painting.
Yeah, so more than that. It is that.
Yes,
it is everything you said. And yes. So I'm not diminishing when I say it's more, but it's more than that. You know, one of the design laws is the law of exertion. Mm. If you want something to get stronger, you must exercise it.
Yes.
Because if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yes.
That is not just physical strength.
Yes.
That is neurobiological tissue. If you want strong math ability, you got to work problems. Strong musical skill, play the instrument.
Absolutely.
Strong language skills, speak the language. And strong ability to make wise choices, mm-hmm. you actually have to practice making wise choices. Strong ability to what we call self-discipline. That doesn't mean self-punish. It means to make the wise choices to deny the cravings of appetite or whatever they might be. And if you want that mastery, it's prefrontal cortex circuitry and anterior cingulate cortex circuitry that needs to develop.
Yes.
That requires exercising those circuits. Your art therapy not only mirrored what he was doing in an object lesson of sticking with it, slowly improving, having to paint over areas. That's all good object lesson stuff. But it required him to discipline himself.
Yes.
He had to sit there. He had to restrain his impulses. He had to pay attention. He had to focus. He had to master his fine motor skills. He had to learn new skills of mixing paint colors and be patient to allow things to dry before he could paint again. And so all of these things required neurobiological development of character skills.
Yes.
Okay, that then can translate. And this is what I tell people. This is what I tell people as a metaphor. If you go to the gym and you lift weights at the gym and your muscles strengthen naturally because you're lifting weights, are you restricted to using your muscles at the gym?
No.
You can use the muscles anywhere.
Yes.
And so if you're using, if art therapy is a medium where we can help a person learn how to focus, pay attention, self-restraint, self-discipline, be patient, and all these different things, they are not restricted to using those abilities only when they're working on art. They can then use them in these other areas, and thus it has an incredible therapeutic benefit. I just love this.
Yes.
We're going to have to do more in our program here.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to be able to cover everything.
Okay. Well, if we can't, you know, we may have to do a part two of this.
I think that would be great.
And I think we're going to do a part two. So we have a few more minutes here today. So but I like where you're going with this, and this is great. So you can tell that I don't have much experience with this, but I actually, because I understand, you know, mental health and well-being, mm-hmm. I can see the connections and the usefulness. This is beautiful. Keep going. Another example or more you want to say about that one?
So I'll add a couple more things to this. So exactly what you were saying, one of the most difficult parts for him at the beginning was when he created his first completed draft. And I said, okay, let's spend another hour painting. Time to keep working on it. He's like, but I'm done. Well, sure, it looks done enough right now, but keep adding to it. Keep making it better. It will never actually fully be perfect. And so I think sometimes we can see in therapy, people reach a certain milestone or they overcome something and they say, okay, I'm done. They don't want to do the next part that's harder. And so having the expectation and then having me working on my own as well of, you know, he thought mine looked beautiful, but here I am still painting over it, right? So having the shared experience of doing it with somebody else as well encouraged him to experientially learn working through something.
Yeah. So the lesson there is a Christian lesson mm-hmm. that it is healthy to never stop growing, developing, learning, advancing.
Yes.
In Christian reality, truth is unfolding. God is infinite. We're finite. And no matter what we have, what epiphanies we've learned, what truths we've applied, how it's helped us grow, there's more to learn. There's more to grow. And if we come to the point where we say, I've arrived, Here are my, you know, creeds or doctrines. These are my beliefs. Then we set down stakes that we defend, mm-hmm. and we stagnate. We stop developing, yes. and stop advancing.
Yes.
And so developing the art therapy, what you're teaching, is a principle of life for a finite being in relation with an infinite God,
yes.
is that we never stop growing. We never stop learning. Life is an exciting adventure,
yes.
to learn and develop more. So,
yes.
so healthy. It's a healthy mindset to have.
So the final part is, well, how did I come up with this? Okay. So there are certain elements of the size of the canvas, the thickness of the canvas, the material, why didn't we draw, right? That went into the construction of this specific intervention for the specific person. So art therapists use a system, and maybe I'll talk more about this in our next episode, called the expressive therapies continuum. And that goes over different neurological processes that are stimulated by different art materials. So painting can stimulate limbic system. So by also engaging in the painting process, he had to experience the activation of that within the controlled within a controlled environment as well.
But he also, with painting, unlike drawing,
yes.
it has to exercise other prefrontal cortex skills like patience, waiting for it to dry.
Yes. So it activated both,
yeah.
which helped that also in a biological way be applied to
therapy. Yeah, no, I love
therapy.
That. Yeah.
And then also the size of the canvas. I mean, imagine if I had given him this giant canvas,
yeah, yeah.
would that have had the same impacts? No, because he could focus on little parts and it wouldn't have the same thing of I have to
continue.
It
could be too overwhelming for somebody to start.
Or it could be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Something we see for people that have PTSD or severe trauma, it's not a great idea to give them a large piece of paper or a large canvas unless you want them to face some of the bigger emotions or you want them to activate some things. So the size of the canvas or paper or whatever also has to be used very intentionally.
So Danielle, thank you for this. This I have found very interesting and stimulating. I've got a lot more questions. You got a lot more to share. So let's pause here and then pick up for a second episode in part two and finish out the discussion on art and art therapy and how art can help our patients in the four domains. Thanks for joining us today. If you have questions, send those into questions@designformore.net, questions@designformore.net, and we'll see you next time.
Loving Designed for More? Share the inspiration. Send this episode to friends, family, or anyone who'd benefit from these insights. Together, let's grow the community. Subscribe, share, and be part of the journey.